I would like to read from 1 Chronicles and chapter 21. Now, most of the accounts in Chronicles are viewed, the same events are viewed at God's perspective rather than the historical view of man. And so as we look at this story in Chronicles instead of Samuel, you will see the focus is divine rather than human. And verse 1 says, and I'm going to read the whole chapter. One thing we do in one chapter instead of 4 or 5 as we have on occasions is that you can read the chapter and concentrate our thoughts just on the one chapter. And Satan stood up against Israel and provoked David to number Israel. And David said to Joab and to the rulers of the people, "Go number Israel from Beersheba even unto Dan, and bring the number of them to me that I may know it." And Joab answered, "The Lord make his people 100 times so many more as they be, but my lord the king, are they not all my lord's servants? Why then doth my lord require this thing? Why will he be cause of a trespass to Israel?" Nevertheless, the king's word prevailed against Joab. Therefore Joab departed and went through all Israel and came to Jerusalem. And Joab gave the sum of the number of people unto David, and all they of Israel were 1,100 men, or 1,100,000 men, that drew sword. And Judah was 430,000 men that drew sword. But Levi and Benjamin counted he not among them, for the king's word was abomination to Joab. And God was displeased with this thing, therefore he smote Israel. And David said unto God, "I have sinned greatly because I have done this thing. But now I beseech thee, do away the iniquity of thy servant, for I have done very foolishly." And the Lord spake unto Gad, David's seer, saying, "Go and tell David, saying, Thus saith the Lord, I offer thee 3 things. Choose thee one of them, that I may do it unto thee." And Gad came to David and said unto him, "Thus saith the Lord, choose thee either 3 years of famine, or 3 months to be destroyed before thy foes, while that the sword of thine enemies overtaketh thee, or else 3 days the sword of the Lord, even pestilence in the land, and the angel of the Lord destroying throughout all the coasts of Israel. Now therefore advise thyself, what word shall I bring again unto him that sent me?" David said unto Gad, "I am in a great strait. Let me fall now into the hand of the Lord, for very great are his mercies, but let me not fall into the hand of man." And the Lord sent pestilence upon Israel, and there fell of Israel 70,000 men. And God sent an angel unto Jerusalem to destroy it, and as he was destroying, the Lord beheld, and he repented him of the evil, and said to the angel that destroyed, "It is enough. Stay now thine hand." And the angel of the Lord stood by the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. And David lifted up his eyes and saw the angel of the Lord stand between the earth and the heaven, having a drawn sword in his hand stretched out over Jerusalem. Then David and the elders of Israel, who were clothed in sackcloth, fell upon their faces. And David said unto God, "Is it not I that commanded the people to be numbered? Even I it is that have sinned and done evil indeed. But as for these sheep, what have they done? Let thy hand, I pray thee, O Lord my God, be on me and on my father's house, but not on thy people, that they should be plagued." The angel of the Lord commanded Gad to say to David, that David should go up and set an altar unto the Lord in the threshing floor of Ornan and the Jebusites. And David went up at the saying of Gad, which he spake in the name of the Lord. And Ornan turned back and saw the angel, and his four sons with him hid themselves. Now Ornan was threshing wheat. And as David came to Ornan, Ornan looked and saw David and went out of the threshing floor and bowed himself to David with his face to the ground. Then David said to Ornan, grant me the place of this threshing floor, that I may build an altar therein unto the Lord. Thou shalt grant it to me for the full price, that the plague may be stayed from the people. And Ornan said to David, take it to thee, and let my lord the king do that which is good in his eyes. Lo, I give thee the oxen also for burnt offerings, and the threshing instruments for wood, and the wheat for the meat offering. I give it all. And King David said to Ornan, nay, but I will verily buy it for the full price, for I will not take that which is thine for the Lord, nor offer burnt offerings without cost. And so David gave to Ornan the price of 600 shekels, that's 15 pound of weight of gold. And David built there an altar unto the Lord, and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings, and called upon the Lord. And he, the Lord, answered him from heaven by fire upon the altar of the burnt offering. And the Lord commanded the angel, and he put up his sword again into the sheath thereon. At that time when David saw the Lord had answered him in the threshing floor of Ornan and the Jebusites, then he sacrificed there. For the tabernacle of the Lord which Moses had made in the wilderness, and the altar of the burnt offering, were at that season in the high place at Gibeon. But David could not go before it to inquire of the Lord, because he was afraid, because of the sword of the angel of the Lord. Then said David, this is the house of the Lord. This is the altar of burnt offering for Israel. David Sins Again is the title that we have placed on the subject for today. And you may argue or say, well, what is there, what sin is there in numbering the people? Now, we have no human reason, or it's difficult to come to some human reason as to why David may have done it. There are some who say that the first incident in which he sinned was the lust of the flesh, and that in this instance we have the lust of the eyes and the pride of life. In other words, David, as king of this nation, was so proud of his position that it would enhance his ego to know the number of people in the land. We don't know. All we do know from putting the two accounts together is, number one, that David wanted to do it, number two, that Satan encouraged him to do it, and number three, that God permitted him to do it. And you may again ask the question, what is the sin? Well, Joab and his captains objected, and we know from history that Joab was not always right. But on this occasion, Joab and the fellow captains were right. David should not have numbered the people unless he had followed the law of God. And when we go back into the book of Exodus, this is what we read. And God had said, when thou takest the sum of the children of Israel after their number, then they shall give every man a ransom for his soul unto the Lord when thou numberest them, that there be no plague among them when thou numberest them. This shall they give, every one that passeth among them, half a shekel after the shekel of the sanctuary, A half shekel shall be the offering of the Lord. And every one that passeth among them that are numbered from 20 years old and above shall give an offering unto the Lord. The rich shall not give more, and the poor shall not give less than half a shekel when they give an offering unto the Lord to make atonement for your soul. Now you all know that the book of Exodus was the book of redemption. It was the record of God's deliverance of his people. They had been in bondage to Egypt, and he had heard their cry. And through Moses, he tells them that I am going to come down, and I'm going to take you out of Egypt and take you into a land that I have prepared for you, a land flowing with milk and honey. And the way that God chose to do this was by means of redemption. And you know the story of the early part of Genesis, how they were to take a lamb for a household, a lamb without blemish. And that lamb was to be slain, and the blood applied to the lintel and the side posts of the door. And God said, when I see the blood, I will pass over you. And so that happened. The firstborn of Egypt was slain. There was much sadness, wailing and gnashing of teeth in the land. But Israel came out, redeemed by blood. And as God dealt with his people from there on, he built into their lives reminders of redemption. There was the Day of Atonement when the lamb was to be slain and the sin of the people were to be covered. There were articles placed on their dress that would remind them that they came out from the land. And God constantly, in their lifestyle, built a reminder of redemption. And here was one of them. When you number the people, says God, they shall give one half shekel after the shekel of the sanctuary as a ransom for their souls, to make an atonement for their soul. And God says, if you number the people without this ransom, there will be a plague in their midst. And I suppose the one thing that surprises me about David, and that is much to his credit, and as we've constantly said, he's a man after God's own heart. But you know, the times that he did sin were times when he forgot what God had said. For an intelligent man, he forgot what God had commanded. And David's sin was not primarily in numbering the people. There was provision for that. David's sin was numbering them in the pride of his own heart and not asking for the ransom money. And you know, as we think about redemption, it is of course one of the prime thrusts of the Bible. Because what we have in picture in the life of the children of Israel, we have in reality for mankind. And the picture of man in sin is often painted as that of slavery. And as we go through the Bible and we study the land of Egypt, the picture of Egypt as that which is sinful is built up. And so the picture that comes to us today is man in his sinful state is similar to the Israelite living in Egypt. And if man is going to be redeemed from the mastery of Satan, he is only going to be redeemed on the principle of redemption. And the Bible is very clear. Here it says, you give half a shekel. But you know, when we come to the fuller redemption of the soul, the Bible particularly says that nobody can offer a price for redemption. A man cannot redeem his brother, neither can he offer a ransom for his soul. And so we have man in the place of needing redemption, but nothing with which to redeem himself. And if God had not stepped into the experience of Israel in Egypt, they would have still been in slavery today. They needed redemption provided for them. And that is an exact picture of humanity today. It needs redemption provided. You see, if we could offer something to God for a ransom of our soul, what could we offer him that was not tainted by sin? Nothing. And so when Peter picks up this theme, he's able to say, ye are not redeemed with corruptible things such as silver and gold, that in the ultimate have no value. They'll do for the time being. Says God, you offer half a shekel after the shekel of the sanctuary as a ransom for your soul. When it comes to the reality of the need of man, silver and gold is of no value. If it were, there would be people today who could well afford to offer fabulous sums of money for their redemption. But Peter says, you're not redeemed with corruptible things such as silver or gold, but with the precious blood of Christ. So as we think of the principle of redemption, which God is illustrating again in this incident in the life of his people, we are reminded of the greater need of redemption of the human soul. Its need to be brought out of the slave market of sin, out of the possession and ownership of Satan, and brought into the liberty that redemption in Christ brings. And so as we look at this incident, David has destroyed the picture. He has not allowed the will of God, the law of God, to operate amongst his people, so they could be reminded again that you have been redeemed. And so the plagues that are promised in Exodus fall on the children of Israel. Now the only exemption, we don't know why Joab left out Benjamin, but Levi was always exempted from any census, any counting, any numbering. And God had said in Numbers, only thou shalt not number the tribe of Levi, neither take the sum of them amongst the children of Israel. They're mine. They're given to the service of the tabernacle, and when you number the people, you will not number the tribe of Levi. So Levi was quite legitimately left from the count. But because the count was undertaken without the accompanying ransom money, the children of Israel were struck by a plague. Now God, as always, is gracious. And David's confession, God gives him three choices. He says, David, you can either have a famine on the land, you can have 3 months of defeat and being overthrown by your enemies, or we can have a 3 days visitation by the sword of the Lord, wielded by the angel of the Lord. Can you imagine what an awesome picture that eventually turned out to be? David chooses the latter, and you notice what he says, God is merciful. Man wouldn't have been. Man would have hounded him from pillar to post. If he had been handed over to his enemies, then his life would have just been sheer misery and danger for the 3 month period. But David knew that with God there was mercy. How did he know? Well, because he had grievously sinned once before. And on confession of that sin, God had moved towards him in graciousness, and he'd had his sin forgiven. And so he preferred judgment from the hand of God because God is merciful. And David was right. We may say, well, how right can he be after 70,000 people had lost their lives by the sword of the angel of the Lord? But when you draw ratios and proportions with the number of the people, you realize that it was an insignificant amount when we've got 1,100,000 warriors without the rest of Israel. And so the sword of the angel of the Lord was stayed. And David saw him in the sky with a sword drawn pointing to Jerusalem. And so did this poor man Ornan. By the way, you'll find he has another name in 2 Samuel. He's hiding with his sons. But God has says, look, the place that the angel has stopped with the sword is the place where you'll make a sacrifice, David. And David moves towards the threshing floor in order to buy it, that he might offer a sacrifice. Now, Ornan was very good, very gracious. It was the king. And if the king wanted his threshing floor, he could have his threshing floor, together with all the paraphernalia for a sacrifice. But I want you to notice what David says, and here I want to dwell for a moment before we conclude. He could have had it for a present, but when we read the both accounts, we read this: nay, but I will verily buy it for the full price, for I will not take that which is thine for the Lord, nor offer burnt offerings without cost. And Samuel says, nay, but I will buy it of thee at a price. Neither will I offer burnt offering unto the Lord, which cost me nothing. You see, David had made one mistake, and he wasn't about to make the second. And I think what we learn as believers, particularly in this passage, is this, that a sacrifice costs. Oh, I know we give mental assent to that. I know we say, yes, the Lord expects me to make a sacrifice. But then we say, wait a minute now. New Testament, spiritual sacrifices, sacrifice of praise. I can leave my money in my pocket. I can do what I like. I needn't worry about my time, because I can offer spiritual sacrifice. Rubbish. Sacrifice in the Bible always costs. And even the poorest in Israel, you notice what it said with the ransom money. The rich shall not give more, the poor shall not give less. And the poor man in Israel who could not offer a bullock was told there's a pigeon or a turtle dove. And if you really can't afford that, there's a handful of meal. But you must offer a sacrifice. Nobody is exempt from sacrifice. Maybe we don't have money to give, and the Lord recognizes that. I've had times in my life where I couldn't even give the Lord a cent if I'd wanted to, a literal copper coin. But you see, it's not that type of sacrifice that God is really looking for. Now, don't misunderstand me. If the Lord is good to you in material blessings, then he expects some of that goodness to be returned in a practical sense. But sacrifice costs. And if I've got $1,000,000 and I give the Lord 100,000, is that cost? You remember what the Lord said when he's sitting by the treasury and the widow comes along and throws in a couple of small coins, and he says, she has given me all that she hath. And as believers, we cannot get out of it on the excuse that, well, it's spiritual sacrifices. What are they? Some nebulous thing that I can make fit whatever I want it to fit. Sacrifice of praise. Well, that's easy. All I got to do is come and sing the hymns. Those things are true because the Bible asks of them from us. But they are not the be-all and end-all of our sacrificing. And when we come to the second book of Corinthians, where Paul is talking about the need of saints He talks about the believers in Macedonia, and he says this, how that in the great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded unto the riches of their liberality. For to their power I bear you record, yet beyond their power they were willing of themselves. And he goes on to say this, and this is the key to spiritual sacrifice of a believer, but they first gave themselves to the Lord. You see, if the Lord's got us, he's got everything. If he's only got our money, there's a lot left out. And what he wants from each one of us is that commitment of ourselves. Now, we've got a lot of young people here, and I'm going to direct my remarks to them for a few minutes, which as an older man I'm perfectly earned the right to do. You've got young lives, and you have choices to make. And those of us who are older, we have been there. We have been, believe it or not, we've sat exams, we've struggled with what direction. I mean, I wanted to go to sea, couldn't afford to go. Then I wanted to be a teacher, took me 40 years to get into teaching. You see? But listen, young people, those decisions are secondary. If the Lord gives you a profession, and he gave me mine in a very marvelous way that left me in no doubt that it was the way he wanted me to go. But if he has given you a profession, he has given it to you for two things. Number one, to pay the rent, because we have to pay rent. But number two, to use that profession as a vehicle to serve him. But that profession is no good to the Lord unless he has got you. And that's the sacrifice that these Macedonians made. They first gave themselves to the Lord. And that's going to cost you. But as David says, I'm not going to give a sacrifice to the Lord that costs me nothing. That sacrifice may take you out of the comfort of Brantford, the comfort of your home. It may take you to some difficult foreign part. It may. It may not. But it's what God wants of you. If you think of the way you want to go, and there's nothing wrong as a young person having ambition. But your ambition should be linked, first of all, with the sacrifice of your life to the Lord. And that doesn't exempt those of us who are older. I'm addressing the younger believers for a particular reason. And I'm going to repeat to you a story that challenged me very much when I was a young boy, young man. There was a father out for a walk with his teenage son, and they were discussing the sort of thing that we're discussing. The importance for the boy to realize that his life had first to be sacrificed to God. And the boy wasn't too happy about this. He sort of said to his dad, well, you know, I'd got my eyes set on being a doctor. And then when I got to be a doctor, I want to specialize. And when I become a specialist, I want to do this. And then when all that's out the way, I'll give my life to the Lord. The father didn't rebuke the boy. He didn't answer in any way. But all of a sudden, he took an orange out of his pocket. And instead of peeling the orange and sharing it with his son, he took out his pocket knife and he cut a hole in the top of the orange. And he proceeded to suck it. So his son said to him, aren't I going to get some of the orange? He said, yes, you'll get it. And they went on and on and on walking, and old dad was sucking the orange, enjoying the juice, and the son was there, what's the old fella up to? When after a while, the father said, here's the orange. The boy said, you've got to be joking. You sucked everything out of it. He said, that's exactly what you want to do to God. And that challenged me like nothing else I had ever heard. Are we going to give our lives to God? Ah, well, those of you who are young couples and starting businesses say, well, we got a family and we're starting a business. Sacrifice costs. And you know, we tend to say, Lord, bless my family. Lord, bless my business. But I really don't have time for the things that you want me to do. And I would warn you, younger believers here today, don't ever do that. If you want your business blessed, if you want your family blessed, give God His time. You are His primarily. He has given you the family to look after. He has given you the business to develop. You haven't got either of those things on your own. And you are not being fair to God, expecting Him to bless those two things when you're not prepared to give Him time. Now, I know it's difficult. I've been through bringing up a family. I've been through running a business. And when I was in practice as a CA in town, January to April was 60 hours a week work, but I was here at a prayer meeting. And I don't say that out of any form of self-glorification. I tell you because I have faced the same challenges that I'm presenting to you. You are God's first. You were redeemed at a price. You were brought back to the relationship with God by the supreme sacrifice that anybody could make. God gave His Son. That's the height, the depth, the length, the breadth of the sacrifice that redeemed you. And my challenge to all our hearts is this. Can we give God less? David says, I'll not give God anything that did not cost me. And in fact, as we went on to the one verse in the next chapter, that piece of land, and there's another transaction in Samuel, but that piece of land became the site for the temple that Solomon built. So it wasn't just that sacrifice for that moment that David gave. He gave something that God could eventually build His house upon. And what you give God enables Him to build. He may challenge you, as He has with some of us, to give your time amongst this company of believers. And if you do, as this assembly grows and is built, it will be built on the foundation of your sacrifice to the Lord. He may take you to the depths of Africa, and believe me, in spite of all the civilization, there's still some depths there. All the bugs and the snakes and all the things that we don't like as human beings, God says, I want you there. We don't know. None of us know. In my own case, the Lord, as I said, gave me my profession in a miraculous way. And He has used that profession to move me to different parts of the world in order that I might, in my own small way, serve Him. But let me leave you with this challenge, all of us, including myself, I will not give anything, to any sacrifice to the Lord, which costs me nothing. Let's sing 379. Take my life and let it be consecrated, Lord, to Thee. Take my moments and my days. Let them flow in ceaseless praise. Take my love, my Lord, I pour at Thy feet its treasure store. Take myself, and I will be ever, only, all.